The following podcast contains scenes of graphic violence, abuse, and a host with a recent acne breakout and general breakdowns. Viewer's discretion is advised. To top it all off, Donald Trump was born on 14th June, making him a Gemini, and my urge to be reborn has never been stronger. Hello, you amazing goldfishes or goldfishes. I do not know what to call you. Like, people who love koi more than everything else are called koiists, I think. So, I don't know. Hi, goldfishes. Welcome to the 12th episode of In the Memory of the Goldfish, hosted by me, Koi. Who is today? Like, I is today. I don't know why I'm talking in the third person. Like, a beautiful mix of melancholy, as the ancients used to say, and spunk. Well, today's episode for once is going to be very fun and unique and funky to an extent. Like, the fishy news is our usual fishy news. Unreasonably sensual, that is. Out of the blue is going to be a conspiracy theory which is going to have multiple parts, and I'm really looking forward to research about the rest of the parts because I did not really do it today because I was like, oh my god, no. And the story, it is of Chris and Luz. I forgot their name. Basically, the lost girls of Panama. Well, in the meantime, let's go fish for some fishy news. So the first fish that I've caught is not my cat. It is a venomous snake found curled up inside a teenager's asthma inhaler. Imagine somebody you know or you yourself is having asthma attack, and then you take a puff from the inhaler and suddenly there's a big black snake in your throat and you're like, oh, choke me daddy. Let's not imagine that. When I was going through the article, it said that while the snake was only a juvenile, Mr. McKenzie said it could have given a nasty bite if scared or provoked. I mean, Australia, and this happened in Australia, and it is a beautiful country. Like, snakes are given the status of juvenile, and accordingly, they were, you know, like, treated for the stupid things or, like, the venomous things that they did. Probably all of my exes are going to love the place, but the sad thing is, I've never had one. Like, it's just me, my 11 souls, and the god of the fucking universe. But no, let's never have an ex. I mean, on a serious note, a proper commentary on the news, most of you often ask me, why do I even do such things? And I have no idea why I'm doing this news, but like, from my experience of Animal Planet and what I was able to read in the article, so Australia is going to go to winters and all the snakes are going to go into hibernation mode. So in this time, they are very overactive. Very overactive does not make sense grammatically. So there's nothing really serious about it. It's just their behavior. It's cute. The snake was pretty cute. Though it is venomous, it cannot really like kill people, but it is kind of fatal depending on whom it's like, you know, biting or like crawling down the throats of, I mean, down my throat. I mean, no, wait. Also, my mom has expressed a great deal of interest in properly listening to my podcast, and I've been like delaying this specific thing because I need to stop overly sensualizing thing if I want her to hear it. Like, when she was like, okay, I need to hear your podcast, and I was like, yeah, no, like, I talk about too many dicks there. And she's like, it's fine, that's funny. I'm like, yeah, no, you're not gonna find it funny. So I should probably stop covering such news which would make me say things like this at the risk of getting kicked out. Or you guys can finally start promoting the podcast by leaving me reviews and such that I can become rich and, you know, move to LA or something. Whatever works. The second one. I did this one just for the headlines and how sensual I can make it. Fair warning. I read, thick as a brick, Scotsman takes harrowing jet skis ride across the Irish Sea, yeah, that was right, to visit girlfriend. I mean, Now, something that is like very interesting, is he talking about his dong or is he talking about his girlfriend or is he talk like what are they talking about that is as thick as a brick? And bricks aren't like really thick, they are hard, and like all other things should be soft, cushiony, and you know, like comfortable. Then like this, and like obviously below in the article when I started actually reading it, they were like, so he was described by a friend as he's nice, but he is thick as a brick. So basically his brain is as thick as a brick. Like, why else? Why was I thinking about anything else? The podcast is gonna be PG-13 by the next episode, I hope. And like this another one, which was very funny, and I'm gonna overly centralize it because this is most probably the last time I'm gonna be able to do that. Most probably not. Who am I even kidding? I'll just like make sure that she does not listen to the podcast. Good Lord, that's like a lot of risk, guys. I don't know why he did it. Says McLagan's mother. The guy's name is McLagan. I mean, what she meant to say was that's what she said. But who cares? He could have killed himself. She also noted. However, like Dale McLagan, the guy, he was 28. He is even sentenced, I do not know, to like 4 weeks of jail time because of this like incredibly dangerous but romantic 40-kilometer journey on a personal watercraft from Scotland's Isle of Witherton to the Isle of the Man. And you know, the craziest thing is that he cannot swim. And I mean, this is true love right there, guys. This is literal true love. Find me someone like this, and I will love that person forever. And like a little bit of love will be saved for you too, because you kind of acted like the broker in this case. Like, if you need a commission, I'm not into orgies, so we'll have to figure something else out. I mean, if Dave McLagan knew that if he became the president of Estados Unidenses, is that right? Of United States. He could have just teleported to her, you know. Yep, that is exactly what we're gonna talk about today in Out of the Blue. I'm gonna talk to you about the Project Pegasus. So originally when I read about it, I started reading about it after watching Rick and Morty when they were like against Obama or something, and Obama was teleporting left, right. So I just went into that direction. I do not know what possessed me, but I was like, okay, this is total bullshit. A lot of Rick and Morty in my eyes, and it feels like a total bullshit. Judge me or not, I don't give fucking care. But yeah, so I love to vehemently deny all conspiracy theories because they're just like, what the actual fuck? Like some of them that FBI is looking at you all the time and all those things. I can understand and kind of agree, yeah, they can monitor you all the time. I do have a duct tape on like the camera of my PC, but whatever. Some of them make sense, but some of them do not make sense at all. This one in specific, it's about teleportation, time travel, and I'm like, no, this cannot be possible. But like why I'm actually covering it is that, you know, on the first page of Google, if you search Project Pegasus, you will not be able to find anything. On the second page, basically nothing. As you like keep on diving deeper, like it feels that it's made very difficult to find it. And then conveniently Marvel did something on it, and it covers a lot of Wikipedia and stuff. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of weird, kind of tricky, and maybe not enough people know about it. That's why it's so difficult to research about. But if not enough people know about it, why did Marvel take up the exact name Project Pegasus? I mean, it's a lot of things, and it's just like kind of hidden. So just because how difficult it is to research about it and how visibly, I don't know, crooked the research process was, I'm like, maybe, just like a little maybe, there's something real to it, and maybe it's completely something different. I do not know, but it is interesting. So I will try to be as neutral as possible and try not to vehemently deny everything, and this would be in parts. I hope it is in parts. I do not like, because I have not researched the entire thing. Maybe next week while I'm researching, I'm like, already this is bullshit and I'm not going to do it. If that happens, I'll tell you on my Instagram, hopefully. But I will at least do a second part to this. Maybe third, maybe fourth. I was thinking of doing like 5 different parts. So next 5 episodes, I'm going to give you like cliffhangers. Anyway, starting with the main thing. So, all right. Where are my these things? Okay. These things, goodness, are my notes. Yeah, okay. So, a lot of information for this episode I found on this website called projectpegasus.net. That is project, project, Pegasus, Pegasus.net. And the protagonist for the said conspiracy theory is Andrew D. Basiago. I did not look up his name, how to pronounce his name. I'm really sorry for that, Mr. Andrew. Basically, he became an official whistleblower in 2004, saying that when he was 6 to 7 years old and up until he was 12, in 1968, he was a test subject for an experiment slash program, which was run by DARPA. And originally it was called ARPA. They also created the ARPANET, which is basically the internet as we know it. Like, they basically laid out the system for it. You must have read about it in high school if you were not like looking at girls or boys or gender neutral people, unlike me, because I was technically homeschooled. Anyway, so ARPA or DARPA are basically a mega US military thingy, organization-y people. They basically like weaponize everything. They were recently in the news saying, allegedly putting cameras on bees because they wanted to have like better surveillance from them. And like, I believe that's the main reason why the US government decided to save bees, because they wanted to look at everybody. And how motion sick would you be when you put like a camera on a bee and it's like blah 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 blah, blah. And I don't know, how would you even like spy on anybody? Do you train the bee? Whatever. But yeah, so like just a little rundown about DARPA, ARPA, whatever. So basically, Mr. Basiago, or I'm going to go with Andrew because it's easier to speak, says that DARPA has not disclosed all and everything that they've discovered and researched about. And he says that they have discovered how to do teleportation, and he was one of the first successful subjects to actually do teleportation. They say it was after President Kennedy's death that they were able to successfully master teleportation. And I mean, I remember Kennedy's death from The Crown, and view, like, that man was weird. No, like, okay, whatever, that was weird out of the blue. So basically, in the 70s, he says that they had a quantum technology to look into the past and the future events and tell the presidents about it. Basically, in my head, it translated to they become like scientifically enhanced tarot card readers and asked Hecate for some blessings by which they can like switch places. I do not know. I know this shit. I'm a witch. I just do not know science. Okay. Now, so basically they wanted to specifically know how and what is going to be the effect of time travel specifically on children. They teleported the said children to Mars. I had read some articles which said Obama went to Mars as Obama, yes, that was the name, right? Barack Obama went to Mars as a teenager. I have not researched about that. Cliffhanger, next episode, guys, tune up. And that the children maintained relationships with the extraterrestrials. They spoke with future presidents to relay information. Now, fun thing with Andrew is that his father, Raymond F. Basiago, was a senior project engineer at Ralph M. Parsons Co. is a company which is like very famous to be working with the US military in very close contact. Like, they have high level security clearance. They worked on like nuclear and chemical jet propulsions for the American government. Their clients have been NASA, the DARPA, whatever. They have built nuclear missile storage facility thingy. So Andrew says that when he was 6, he was taken to Curtis Wright Aeronautical Co. facility in Woodridge, New Jersey, Building 68 to be specific. And he defines that inside there's a device that consisted of two parentheses-shaped objects about 8 feet tall and 10 feet apart. When the device was turned on, a curtain of light, which looked like water, happened. Like, I don't know how to explain it properly. Like, you know, watch Rick and Morty with the Barack Obama episode. It would give you a good visual. So, he went there with his dad, and his dad explained that he was going to hold his hand and they were going to count to three and jump through the curtain of the said energy. And when they did that, they found themselves at a certain point of a tunnel and like some face of the earth. Some like it was a lot of sci-fi things, so I'm going to just like skip over all that. And when they like went through it, they ended up in State Capitol Complex in Santa Fe, New Mexico, just a few seconds later. Now, so they were able to teleport over 2,000 miles across, I believe, in several seconds. And there was a guy named Bill Richardson who was there to greet them, along with the defense attaché working with DARPA, a man called Donald, not Trump, Donald Rumsfeld. I should have looked up the pronunciation too. Now, the thing about people like materializing in the state capital in New Mexico is something that a woman complained about all the time. Like, she was even there in media for a little while, but she's very obscure. I was not able to really find any information on her as such. Maybe she was hushed by the government or whatever. Like, finding information on this, there's a lot of information if you're able to click on the right link. But finding that right link is all that it takes. So yeah, this is going to be it for today's Out of the Blue. And the next time, I'm going to talk about somebody that you absolutely fucking know, who has a successor that you all hate, that is Elon Musk. And how was he related to time travel, how he died, and how the US government most probably did some shit with his thingies. No, they did not do anything with his thingy. They did things with his research, I think. And yeah, imagine if all the missing persons cases were teleportation experiments gone wrong. I mean, how is that for a conspiracy theory, huh? CIA? Like, are you gonna now send all those daddies in like black suits to tie me up now? Like, are you gonna gag me because I'm telling the truth? Okay, no. Well, I binge watched Bonding today and I like finished it, and you cannot blame me for being like kind of dominatrixy in my own weird humanity. I should stop saying E after everything. Okay, so today's what is this that this podcast does? The story. Today's story is called Dirt, and it's about a missing person's thingy, and I did not think of the teleportation possible clause, but we've thought of it now, and that can come later when I tell you about the reality of it. So let's get right on to it. The story, as I told you, is called Dirt, and the time frame that I've given to it, which is actually historically accurate, 1st April 2000, like not totally historically accurate, kind of historically accurate, 1st April 2014, and the time is 19 hours 30 minutes, so that is like 7:30 p.m. Oh God. Why did we decide to get an unpredictable tart on an unpredictable trick? I have no idea where that little idiot disappeared to. I don't even remember his name properly. Both of us are just calling him Bo all the time. He didn't even react to it properly. Now, look where he's gone off to. I have really, like, I don't remember which exactly what they're talking about, but if it's a man or a dog, it kind of sounds like the same person thingy, or a child for that matter, or a pig. So, I mean, for heaven's sake, a hoot or a howl or something. How can we even go back without you? They will be devastated. It's not like you saw the squirrel for the first time, Bo. Why did you have to run behind it? It's not like your overfed ass can catch a turtle. It's a dog, I'm pretty sure it's a dog now. Yes, I remember it's a dog now. We ran after him. cup's leg got stuck in some kind of root. I leo the forest. In the middle of the forest. I have no idea what I was trying to say. Something the forest. But what kind of a self-respecting, God-fearing tree makes such boogie traps for unsuspecting, kind people? Good lottery, get a life. I mean, really. Fuckness, goodness, gracious. Carp is supposed to be the smarter one. The one, you know, like, would end up saving me and carrying me on her shoulder like she promised. I am a pillow you can fall on from today to eternity. And so, wish for her to say that those that in our vows. However, right now, I want nothing more than to walk out, if not walk out, crawl out with her from this mess. I did not sign up for this. This wouldn't help me improve my accent in any way. Oh, what do I talk to? The trees? If I messed up the pronunciation, they'll grow another root to trip me over too. You deserve it for mispronouncing impermeabilizante, you over-optimistic bitch. So, okay, so a lot of you have complained that I do not, like, really have distinction between how I comment on the story, so, versus the story, and I'm really sorry for that. I do not really like making those distinctions because that's kind of stupid, because I don't want to read the story like this deep voice which you are like, that's idiotic. So a comment, like a side comment on that, impermeabilizante is a Spanish word which I cannot pronounce, and I'm good at pronouncing Spanish according to my Spanish teacher. It basically means something which is impermeable, like my existence. Yeah, self-bound bitch. So yep, and they're stuck in the forest, and I kid you not, this story sounds fun because the reality of this is so messed up. So I wanted to write it in this manner. Anyway, back to the story. Carp puts her hand on my shoulder. Calm down, my morning dew, she says. I hate it, I hate it, I hate it. Why is she getting to comfort me when her leg is bluer than my cap? Why does she get to support me here too? Why can't I bring myself to do it? You know, this emotion of feeling worthless is something that I have felt so much with some of my relationships. For example, this, okay, that's like a huge segue. So basically, somebody that I know gives a lot to me, supports me emotionally and a lot. And whenever she is in some kind of trouble herself, I'm not able to do it because I'm 19. And I'm 19 is not an excuse, but I'm stupid and I cannot handle my own emotions. So I'm like, why am I always on the taking side of things? I don't know how. So I relate to Koi in this sense, the Koi of the story. Continuing with the story, the trees are closing up on me. I feel I left my Xanax back at my room. Okay, so I'm not sure if Xanax is the anxiety drug or not, but I think it is. If it's not, please do not scream at me. Koi, you won't need this in this forest. It will stress you there, my beauty. She said, Carp sits chuckling when I was trying to put things with it earlier. I do not know what to do. She rubs a little soil on the wound on her elbow. She said it won't contaminate, it'll stop the blood. She's a genius. I hope her genius can also fix up her leg too, like immediately. I do not know what to do. Bitch, you gotta learn magic and do like abracadabra shit out of all the wounds. Okay, I have decided. Get on my back. I'll start with 10 steps and like that we'll cover it out. Okay, I say with a lot of passion in my voice. Do you even know where we even go? Where's the cabin? We might as well end up going deeper in the forest and die. She has a certain amount of irritation in her voice. Something I do not think I've ever noticed before in her. Was it always there? What do you suggest we do? Die here? I say. I'd rather if we wait for someone. Or you can go look for my bag. It fell when I tripped. She said as she pointed her thumb to the right, pointing at the devil tree. The next timestamp that I've given is 2nd April 2014, 1:12 a.m. So about, I believe, 6, 7 hours, 8, 9, I have no idea how many hours after that. God, her backpack ended up on the fifth corner of the earth. I got lost. I started to howl. How that dog should have. I love the koi in this story. I love how often I make the main character koi so relatable to my own self, and like through these, you get to know me so much better. Good Lord, I'm so vulnerable in this podcast, and the reason why my family should not listen to it. I howled. Carp howled back. I love Carp and their understanding. It took me 132,385 breakdowns in like 6 hours, if my watch is functioning properly, to get the freaking bag back. Fishing bag back. Yeah, if, whatever. Her thing was heavier than it needed to be. All it had was tin cans and food. When I somehow made it to her eyes felt bloodshot to me. I could not really see them, so I clicked a picture, the only source of light I could really get my hands on. They actually were. I'm not sure if it was the sleep deprivation or the anger that she had on my inadequacy. Honey, it's most probably that her feet is bluer than your fucking cap that she has bloodshot eyes. She's in pain. But Koi has this tendency to make everything about them, him or whatever. Come on here, give me your shoulder. Let's simply sleep and forget the dog. Let's go back where we've came in from. Now your marks must be all over the place, she said. I felt a wave of calm rushing into me. There was no longer any annoyance in her voice. Yes, you fucking koi. Everything's about you. If there's no annoyance in her voice, it's about you. What an idiot she. Okay. I love myself, guys. Just saying. Continuing with the story. Okay, I'm not wearing socks and suddenly it's getting cold and my nose is kind of blocking up. So if I'm doing this all the time, I do not have corona, I guess. Ooh, I have some amazing news for you guys. I'll cover it like maybe at the end of the episode. I'll note it down. Okay. Okay. I fell beside her, making sure nothing of me touches her foot. Our waists touch each other just a little. She moaned a little as she shifted herself to take support of me. She placed both her hands in the space between her thighs. I know this is the most precious thing you can do. I do this with my cat, does this with me when he sleeps, like right next to my thigh, puts his hands like between our body, kind of. It's like warm, it's cute. Where have I left? Yeah, so she placed both her hands in between our thighs. I knew that she first looked into my eyes. I clicked another picture of her hair, how golden and beautiful. It's interesting how there are little mosquitoes around here at this hour. Packing half a gallon of mosquito repellent instead of water now seems like a not a very smart choice. At least I have this one thing to whine about when we get out of this. There is, I, okay, you know, this is always very good. Whenever you're like in a stupid situation, start to note down things you want to rant about. So like it makes the thing comparatively easier. You know, I'm trying to like speak louder a little bit, and then I go back to my normal tone. I have no idea why I'm doing this. It's weird that I'm like at the 12th episode and I'm still getting nervous for recording the podcast. Fun. There is, continuing with the story, there's a rustle in the shrubs. It doesn't wake Carp up. Maybe there isn't any and I'm just on my toes. I can hear everything, even the things that do not make sound, I feel. I click picture of whatever it is. I heard Bear Grylls say that they all run away when there's a sudden flash of light, I think. I love me quoting Bear Grylls. I'm not seeing his shows in like years now. I mean, it seems to be kind of working, right? Each flash, the rustling goes away. The sounds, all of them, go away. It's silence for 10 minutes, then the crickets start to chirp again. You know, there's a cricket actually chirping or like cricketing, whatever it's called, around me, and it's giving me more goosebumps. And I wrote this story while I was traveling, and it's a story kind of about these two girls traveling, and I was getting like goosebumps the entire time because I was in the car while I was typing, and it was weird. It was very, very weird writing this story. I'm not kidding. Then it's the leaves which start to rustle. Then it's an owl which flaps its wings. Then it's the sound of the, and then it's the sound of the bushes. I can do this all night, Growler. So the sounds that she has given it a name, Growler. I closed my eyes to absorb the sight. I have written S-A-R-L-I-E-N-C-E, salience. I have no idea, silence. And to see if there is anything left that makes these sounds. There wasn't for 5 seconds. Now, as if Carp was waiting for me to close my eyes, she started to scream the loudest thing I've ever heard. I know I immediately opened my eyes. I know I did. She was holding her left knee. Her swollen foot was no longer there. It seems to have been cleanly cut off. It stood there in front of us, on a little rock. Behind it was this sound. It was there. The air was just vibrating as it was making its growling sounds. I picked Carp up. I'm getting goosebumps. Oh my god. How stupid I am to get scared by my own fucking story. I mean, this is like a compliment to my own self, but okay. I picked Carp up, threw her on my shoulder like I threw her towels, and I started to run. The growler was still far away. It really didn't bother much. Carp suddenly bit my back. Not the sexy kind. She actually bit me. She bit me and instinctively threw her away. Again, like a wet towel. I knew that I did. I knew that I did because of her moans, and everything that was around me subsided. My hands were shaking. I took out the camera. I clicked a picture. I saw her beautiful golden hair with a waterfall of crimson flowing out. I didn't know what to do. The end. That was the story. Okay, what? How can I be chirpy about reading such a story? How can I fucking write such a story while I was traveling? What's wrong with me? Oh my god, I need therapy. I was gonna continue the story even further about I didn't know what to do. And then after that, the growler would come near and then dismember both of the girls in like each and every detail, how their intestines would come out and stuff. But I was too creeped out at that point because I was, as I told you guys, I was traveling and I really did not want anything more to go with it. Okay, so, and the story in itself is kind of a mix of my, like some stories I've done recently, they were like totally like coked up fiction inspired thingy. This is a mix of the two. So the girls being together is something that I've not read about really. So I'm pretty sure that it is false. The paranormal growler in this case is is also kind of false, I think, like, because it's a missing person's case, kind of missing person's dead people case, I don't know. But the events, the entirety of the thing, like, as I tell you about, it made me want to put in the paranormal twist here. And the story, as I told you before, is like the actual incident, as I told you before, is called The Lost Girls of Panama. La Las Chicas Orlandes, as they're called in the Costa Rican village, or The Disappearance of Chris Kremers and Lizanne Frun in Brockett, Panama, on 1st April 2014. So they went on the trek on 1st April 2014, but they did not, like, all the other events were, like, spread out evenly throughout the times of their disappearance. That's why I said, like, it's kind of historically accurate, like, kind of very kind of historically accurate. And 1st April, I went with that because it's kind of like the April Fool's Day, and it's like fun and like jokes and shit, and this happened on April Fool's Day. And I'm like, why are we still celebrating April Fool's Day when all this happened? And shouldn't we like do make like it a missing person thing? But anyway, so Lizanne Frun was 21. She graduated from Applied Sciences, and Chris was 22 when she had a degree in cultural social education. Chris was actually very tall. She was 1'6". No, Chris was not that tall. Okay, I think I've confused these. I have no idea. Okay, so Chris, I say, is 167 centimeters tall, and she's considered to be extroverted, extravagant, cheerful, intelligent, and outspoken. Lizanne is very Lizanne, yeah. Lizanne is very tall. She's 184 centimeter, I believe, almost 6 feet. She was an experienced mountaineer. She was a thoughtful person. She was intelligent, empathetic, and a little bit shy. So these two women, they met while working in a restaurant called Den Klein en Hop. Den Klein en Hop. I do not know how to pronounce it in Dutch. I do not speak Dutch. In Amsterdam. And they both rented rooms in the same student dorms or houses. And they were kind of like immediate besties. They immediately hit off. And they did what all besties do. Plan a graduation trip. So on after like saving for about 6 months, on 15th March of 2014, they went to Costa Rica. There they spent some time at the coast. They picked up some Spanish, like brushed up more on the Spanish skills, just had fun. And after 2 weeks of spending time there, they changed their course, they changed their direction. Like, not technically changed, they went to the main thing of the trip, that was the village called Brockett in Panama. Like, it's a very beautiful village. I looked up the pictures, where they intended to teach the local children. However, like, I'm not sure which one is true, but some articles said that their internship was totally cancelled, and some say that it was delayed for about a week. So they were like, all right, fine. They anyways ended up staying with the local family for about like for the week of cancellation or the permanent cancellation, since they were already there. So on 1st of April 2014, it was a very pleasant day. The girls, they decided to walk the La Pianista Trail, which is basically like you go up then you go down kind of path. It is and I believe La Pianista also kind of translates to that. And so they like packed light clothing, tank tops and shorts, with a camera, some money, and a cell phone. One was an iPhone and another was a Samsung Galaxy. And this would be very interesting later on. Now in the evening, like they went there for the trek, and they also took like a village dog, or the family that they left with dog with them, and the dog came back in the evening, but the girls did not. So the host family, they started to search for the girls around the neighborhood and stuff, but they were not really able to find them. So fair thing, the trail was about, I believe, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 miles away from their host house. Maybe I've written it later in the notes, but I do not remember. It was like it was far, but not that far away, so the dog could have walked back home. So they searched around, the host family searched around, but they could not really find them. And they decided to wait another day before calling the police. It was on the 3rd of April that the local authorities started to search for the girls. It was on 6th of April that both of the girls' parents and some Dutch detectives landed the Costa Rican soil, and with them some local police with dog units and helicopters did like a very thorough search of the area. But they did this search for about 10 days, but they were not able to find anything. So a lot of locals do say that even after the 10 days, they kept on looking for the girls because Costa Rican people and Latino people in general are gems. And also the parents of the girls were offering a 30,000 reward to whosoever was able to find them or give them an information and such. Okay. So after 10 days, as they were not able to find anything, it kind of went cold. However, it was 10 weeks later in June that a local tribeswoman found a backpack in a rice, backpack in like rice in a rice paddy field on the bank of the Culebra or the Serpent River. Now this woman said that the bag floated on the very day that she found it because she was a frequent visitor at the spot, and she visited the spot the day before, and it was not there. All right, so the place where they found the backpack was 17 kilometers from Boquete and 8 kilometers from the trail. So it was estimated that it was about 8 hours away on foot from the last known location, and the village in itself was in a very remote area, so it would have been very difficult for them to hike there on foot for after like 10 weeks, given that they did not really carry anything for survival. Now, with this, the detectives and people had something to search about, to look into for and such. Now, in the backpack, there were 2 pairs of sunglasses, $83 in cash, Froon's passports, or both of the girls' passports. I think it was both of their passports, but I've written Froon's passport, so I have no idea who to trust, my brain or the notes. There was a water bottle, 2 bras. I saw the pictures too, so I can attest to that. And the most important of the discoveries, which actually kind of not helps solve the case, but give it a lot more direction and make it even more creepy, was their cameras and phones. So it's said that the phones remained in service for almost 10 days after their disappearance. The last time one of the phones was turned on to check something was on 11th April. Over the span of 4 days, there were 77 total attempts of calling the police, both via 112, the emergency number in Netherlands. The girls were from Netherlands, if I've not mentioned that before, and 911, which is basically the emergency number in Panama. Now, using the call logs and those things, they were able to figure out an outline of how much time they were in the forest and stuff. Now, it's also fair to note that Lizanne had asthma and, the snake in the asthma inhaler. And now Lizanne had asthma and she complained to the host family about coughing, shortness of breath and pollen and such. And it's considered that her asthma paired with the altitude differences and the sudden changes, not having a cell phone signal and them hiking a very advanced trail. This trail is actually very dangerous, as I'll tell you later on why and how. The women were at a very high risk, but Lizanne's asthma inhaler was not really among the belongings in the backpack, which was kind of weird. So also the weirdest part is that the investigators determined that the belongings of the women had 34 different fingerprints. 13 of them were on the bag, were in the bag, the contents in the bag. Okay, I'm still getting goosebumps. This is one of the creepiest things I've ever read. And it's such of a mix between true crime and paranormal. It's mostly true crime. But yeah, there's no real paranormal angle to it that I was able to actually research. So maybe if you know something, tell me. So the cell phone revealed that something happened to the girls at 3:39 p.m. because that was the first time that they attempted to call the emergency line. First the international one, the Dutch one, and then the Panama line. Since there was no reception, the calls were never connected. I mean, maybe nothing happened to them and they were just lost and they decided to call the authorities to like find them. So on 1st April, like both phones tried to connect to an emergency line. On the 2nd of April, they tried 4 times. Each day, they made more and more attempts to find a signal connection, it seemed. Something seemed to especially have happened in the 5th, between 5th or on 5th and 7th or between these days, that something happened to Lizanne, it feels, or Chris, sorry, something happens to Chris, that Lizanne's Samsung battery had run out and Chris's iPhone was now the only phone which had battery power. Due to the dense jungle, none of their attempts, like as I told you before, went through. Though one of the calls, I believe, which was made from the iPhone, went through, but it went through only for 2 seconds and the connection broke. Now, on 6th of April, somebody tried to unlock Chris's iPhone but did not know the PIN. Now, things start to get like really weird. Why would somebody want to open her iPhone if they just simply want to dial the emergency number? They need not open the iPhone, no. And like, it was on 11th that the Apple phone's battery ran out. And something that Bear Grylls would never teach you is that you need to buy Apple devices if you want to survive the wild, because it has an amazing design and an amazing battery life and will completely obliterate any existence of cash and stability of your pockets. Now, this was the paid promotion, which Apple really did not pay me for, but they should, because I am basically promoting them, because they can save your lives once if you are stuck in the Panamian desert, Panamian forest, whatever. So now this was about the phones, all right? If you think that was, oh my God, so gruesome, so deadly, guess what happened when they opened the camera? Like initially there were some cute pictures from the April 1st morning, but things went creepy as fuck on the 8th of April. Now there were a lot of photos clicked between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. on 8th April. The photos showed there were some like belongings of the girls spread out on rocks, like plastic bags, candy wrappers, tin thingies, like those tin cans opened up and in kind of like a circle in a very humanoid pattern. And there were like oddly piled mounds of dirt. There was a mirror in between of them. It kind of felt like a ritual, to be honest. And to add to this nightmare, there was a picture of Chris's hair. This picture I was not able to see. Like, I was not able to find, but it was quoted everywhere that there was a picture. I closed my eyes and the picture formulated in front of, I visualized it and I'm like, oh my God. Okay. Where is that? Yeah. So there was a picture of Chris's head, her strawberry blonde hair, and a stream of dried blood flowing from her forehead. There was a total of 90 pictures clicked, some which were taken few seconds apart, other up to 15 minutes later. Several shots appear to have been deliberately taken at pointing at something. Some of them were like simply blurred, indicating that they were taken like under duress or like some kind of anxious breakdown. At this point, the girls were in the forest for a week. And some people say that they were trying to like use the camera as a source of light, as I mentioned in my story. And there was this one picture, thinking about which gives me such goosebumps. I'm getting goosebumps on the insides of my thighs this time without even getting to the thigh part of the story, okay? So there was this one picture where there was allegedly a body at the base of a cliff and somebody tried to click a picture with it. However, it remains inconclusive that it whether it was a body or not because it was clicked in a very dark environment and like stuff. But good fucking Lord, imagine your friend fell down a cliff and you need to click pictures to see her body. Oh my Anyway, so these were the pictures, and there was one specific picture in specific 509 which was deleted, and it was deleted in such a manner that it was not able to be, they were not able to recover it. It was in a digital camera, so ideally they should have been able to recover it very easily. And like running through some tests and, you know, like the usual media, I don't know, media, whatever it's called, techie things, but they were not able to do that. And it was felt that somebody took the digital camera, plugged it into some kind of device, and properly erased all traces of that picture. Because even if it was manually deleted, some traces of the deleted picture could have been found. But picture 4509 was not found, and it was in the series, so the camera could not have fucked up that because it was a digital camera. So that too. Now the story is only gonna get creepier from this point on. Remember the place where the backpack was found? After about 2 months, I believe, or like in some, yeah, after about 2 months was a different thing, but like the police was able to find Chris's clothing, her shorts. They were properly zipped up, folded very neatly, and put on a rock on the edge of the river. Okay, I'm holding my hair and I'm pulling them. 2 months later, in around the same area, I do not understand how they find like such evidences around the same area just lying around, and they were not able to find it in the first place. I'm not police, I'm new to true crime things, and this keeps on baffling me. How do people not see evidence in front of them? So in the same area, they found a pelvic bone, and the worst, a foot inside a boot still attached. Like there's, I saw the picture, there's like socks, there's bone fragments still inside the foot. So it feels like the foot and the shoe were like cut off, broken off in a manner that, like, if the leg was broken, it was broken in a way that the foot literally broke off the body. It got dismembered, okay? And yes. And this foot, I believe, was also found displayed kind of on top of a rock upright. Like, yeah. All right. And the pelvic bone, the foot with the boot, and Chris Kramer's bones were found all over, and they were stark white. They looked as if they had been like totally bleached and like cleaned, you know. Soon after this, like, bones from both the women were discovered. Lizanne's bones, on the other hand, seemed to have been decomposed as they were like flesh attached to them, but Chris's were bleached, as I told you earlier. Along with these two women's bones, bones of three other individuals were found nearby, and something just knocked on my door, and I don't want to look at it. Like, I'm not sure if you heard it or not. And my cat's sleeping in front of me and he's snoring. That's kind of precious and cute. I'm happy that he's not licking himself violently today. Okay, back to the story. If I was an idiot and I was to leave you here at the cliffhanger of all these things and not break down all of them, because this story actually needs analysis and breaking down of the facts, okay? My initial reaction when I went through all these tasks was Bujeria. Witches. I mean, I love witches, but there are some creepy witches out there too, that somebody killed them. Either there's a serial killer or a psychopath, or there was some kind of abduction, or as I quote, like my own quote, something even more darker than nature itself. And if you also think that, you are not wrong, because honestly, this is kind of totally messed up. Now I'm going to break down some stories, some theories around this, and some facts. Like, there are a lot of them. Now the Panamanian authorities, if that's a word, deem that this is a closed case, but the Dutch authorities think that there's a lot more to the case which has not been properly investigated. This was, I believe, they said in 2018. Like, there's a 100% chance that there's like foul play involved. they said that there's a very high chance that there's a coercion of evidence and like evidence tampering and all those beautiful, amazing stuff nobody wants in any investigation. Now, so basically this trail, as I told you before, is an up and down trail. So down south is a downhill trip when you reach the top, and up north is where you get into the deep wilderness and it's like uphill. So it's considered that Chris died or was gravely injured during around 6th, okay? And Lizanne tried to open her phone for connection and such. They have also considered that since they ended up climbing like to the north side, which was uphill, again, I'm like stressing on that, completely different from the return part, is that it was a very, it was like a treacherous trail and they fell down, and like, and the picture with the body down the cliff. So maybe that's how they were able to find the dismembered foot. Okay. The objects which were laid out, which makes total sense to me, were maybe perhaps kind of an SOS, because mirrors and all those things laid out in a circle, and if there was a forest to a helicopter to fly over that specific area, they would know that a human did all those things recently. So they would know already this is the area that they need to search. But they were not able to do that. And it's considered that it was by the 11th that they both died, or that was the last time they could say that they made any contact whatsoever, their phone batteries and everything. That was like the basic end of their digital trail. So maybe they both died by 11th. And their bodies were to the mercy of the nature and the scavengers and all the things of the animal. However, the problem with this proposed theory is that the trail is very easy to see from the higher altitude, because it's, your way back is downhill at the peak of the trail where it's supposed to end for the amateurs and the people without the guides. They can see everything. It's very easy to guide yourself from that top, that already this is the way we need to go. And so a wrong turn, or they just like messed up something, would not have happened, because they knew they had to go downhill, but where they went was uphill. Okay, maybe the story speculation that I had that they ended up running after dog is true. I have no idea. Okay. And it says that it's basically impossible for them to have made the mistake, because one of them was an experienced mountaineer. And yeah, now there's another, the theory of abduction is kind of unlikely, because they think that the kidnapper would not have allowed them to hold on to their phones. However, there's a very strong chance that somebody followed them. Now, what I'm about to tell you next is this specific thing I was only able to find on this specific YouTube channel, Bedtime Stories, and I personally was not able to find any documents supporting this specific theory, but since it's out there, I'm going to tell you about it. So they talk about this unnamed guy who mistreated other women throughout the tour. And the same unknown, unnamed tourist guide was also said that he met with Chris and Lorraine and offered them a trekking package deep into the wilderness, but they declined for reasons not understood. And I mean, given that he's an unknown guy, I do not know how people know that somebody without an identity also did all these things with other women. Like, kind of, it's kind of weird on that level. Wait a fucking second. Okay, I for a very quick second felt that I was not recording. And I was, oh my god, no. Because nowadays, earlier I used to record in like 30 different takes, and now I just click on record and I go on with it. Like, maybe a water break here and there, but that's about it. Okay, that was scary. This, I guess, the second time I thought that I was not recording, but I was recording, but I'm so smart. Anyway, so yeah. So as I told you, we do not know a lot about this guy, but they also say that the bones were found half a mile from this guy's farm. But yet again, we do not know who this guy is. So how do we know it's from away from his farm? It does not make sense, but okay, it was there. So, you know, so I have to tell you about it. Now, It is also noted that the bones did not have a wear and tear as such. If, for example, if fox or like crows were to eat the bones, there were no claw marks on it, there were no bite marks on it, they were kind of clean. All right. So the scavengers theory is kind of like, okay, maybe not. The folded clothes and 30 plus fingerprints on the backpack can be traced to, like, basically the tribes people. They said that they found the clothing and they wanted to be respectful to the clothing because Latin people are amazing. And they folded it on the, like, river and, like, on a rock above the water such that they do not get dirty or anything. So yeah, and the bleaching bones part, they say that it could be because of the sun, like where the bones were placed, and like there are a lot of theories, nothing conclusive, and I really do not know what happened out there. But the biggest red flag, like the biggest red flag in the entire thing was that other than the pelvic bone of Chris's pelvic bone, there was no other major big bone found of any of the victims. Any of the victims, I'm going to tell you what any of the victims signifies in a little bit. So there were no skulls, there were no reported animals in the areas who could actually eat such large bones such as skulls. No skulls were found, no ribs, I believe, were found, like, properly, whatever, okay? And so they say that because it was a very, it's a very popular tourist spot, no? Like, over 18% of the GDP of the area is because of tourists. So the police and the authorities try to bury the incident to make sure that there's a steady influx of tourists all the freaking time. And now, okay. So also the another theory with this is that there's some kind of cannibal serial killer person on loose or some kind of cannibal tribe which lives in the forest, because there have been about 25 deaths or disappearances in the areas. But the police just goes on to say that the terrain is very loose and it's very harsh, and April to October, when it's the rainy season, even the local people do not tread the trails, and the women and everybody else who usually disappear do tread the trails in this time. All right. And so, yeah, I mean, we can never really know what could have happened there. We really cannot even fathom what happened, who did it, or was it all nature? All theories have their loopholes, yes, and all of them make equal sense. And I should have said this before starting the podcast, but like before starting the story, but I'll say it now, that I do not mean any disrespect to any victims, or like no disrespect to anybody. I am legit always wishing that all the victims, all the people that I read about, rest in peace if they died, and just find their justice if they did not. And yep, so this was the case of Las Chicas Orlandes. And yeah, that's it. Now, I believe there was something in the middle of the podcast that I said that I will tell you by the end of the whole thing, and I've forgotten what it is. So I guess maybe for the next time, because I really don't want to go back in the podcast and listen to it again, because that's kind of boring, and I'm doing hot girl shit to do that thing, and my hot girl shit is going to be basically sleeping. So yeah, that's the end of the episode for today. And this month we are very soon going to have the listeners validation episode. I have gotten one story so far, and maybe we'll end up working with that one only, and I'll write it in a manner that it becomes an entire episode, because the rest of you all are lazy. So thank you for this mysterious person. I'm not going to disclose their name right now, because let there be, I don't know, Hunger Games on who's my one for the first episode. And yeah, you can mail me your stories at koi@readmademynifix.com, or you can even DM me on Twitter or Instagram as Koi On Air. The podcast is hosted by Koi On Air, co-produced with Nifix. The music is by Lil Addy. And is that it? Is that the end of the credits? I've been doing this for so long. I should have written this down. I believe that's the end of it. If I missed anything, like, look up the previous episodes if there's anything more. And yeah, all right, bye bye guys. Do not travel, but do not travel. I do not know, buy Apple phones and gift me those Apple phones, because I do not need a new one. I need a new Bose speaker so badly. My present speakers works perfectly fine, but I want to be fancy. Anyway, enough of my rant. Make me rich, guys. Give me your reviews on iTunes and whatever. Make me famous. Bye.